You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas, and thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you guys are doing great out there, and thank you so much for all of you who have been so gracious and warm and with your support and encouragement of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. It's just been amazing to hear from so many of you, and thank you so much for that. And if you have experiences of your very own and would like to be a guest on the podcast, please let me know. You can reach out to me via email at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com, and we'll get in touch, and we'll figure out when to get you on and how to get you on, and we'll schedule it out, and you too can come on the show and tell your stories. But we got a great show lined up for you guys today. I got Annie joining us, and she has a whole bucket full of experiences, just an incredible journey, and I'm really pleased to bring that to you, so let's get into that. So, Annie, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I know it's it can be kind of challenging, I guess, sometimes for some people to get out, to lay these stories out there. But I think it's a very brave thing for people to do as well. And, I really appreciate that you chose our forum to do that. It's a great honor, and I'm just thrilled to have you.
Well, Brent, you just sound so easy to talk to and such a pleasant person.
Oh, well, I guess I got that going for me. And thank you so much. I mean, that really does mean the world. I hope everybody that's on the show feels comfortable, because, it's a daunting thing, I suppose, because it's an open forum. It's a public forum. And in many cases, people are really kind of bearing their soul, and they're talking about things that have never happened, they've never had the opportunity to discuss before. So I just think it's a very sacred thing to me, and I really appreciate it. So you have, I guess we could start out with your UFO experiences. That's really incredible.
Yeah. On my husband's family, there's four generations that have seen UFOs, and the first one goes back to this would be back in the late 1800s. It was his Apache, and I think she's his great or great-great-grandmother.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to try and remember right now. But she saw one that was on a hill. It had landed, and it was on the hillside. So that's all the description I have, because I got it from his mother, and it was passed down through the family. And then the next one was his mother and himself. So he was about 12. So it'd be in the mid-50s. And this is in the San Fernando Valley in California, which okay. is part of L.A. County. Mm-hmm. And they were driving down the North Hollywood Freeway, and all the cars stopped. And the people got out, and up above, they saw one of those cigar-shaped type UFOs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So all the traffic was stopped, and then they watched it go away, and then once it was gone, all the cars started up again. Yeah, just like you hear all the time. Mm-hmm. Although, you have to wonder if it wasn't one of ours, because by that time, you know, they had that program going.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the secret space program. Yeah, after Roswell, I think, is kind of where that kind of started taking off.
Well, maybe even before that, because, you know, all that information was available 100 years ago with Tesla.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, good so point. It's probably a combination.
Mm-hmm.
So then all my kids have seen them. My son, when he was in the fourth grade, his teacher wanted to, the kids, if they were awake about 5 or 5:30 a.m., she wanted them to look out the window to see if they could see the satellite.
Oh, okay.
But at that time they had satellites going over, so she wanted the kids to watch for satellites. So he happened to wake up, he looked out the window, and he saw these lights that you hear about that are moving at right angles, several lights moving at right angles.
Mm-hmm.
And my other son, now he used to like to take pictures when he went to and from work, and this is in California. And he liked to take sunsets and sunrises and all that, and he would take them in from his vehicle on his way to work. So one of the times that he took pictures, when he took it home and looked at it on his camera, he had three pictures of a UFO, and you can see it moving across the sky. And it's not your typical UFO. It looks like a boat. I mean, it's shaped, really, it's got a bow, and then the back is flat, and there's some kind of, I don't know what they are. They're not portals, but there's something along the side.
Wow.
So that's, yeah. And my other son won't talk about it, but my daughter's is really, really cool, because this was back when this would be about 15 years ago, and she was having a cigarette out on the patio at night and just, you know, just relaxing, and she looks up, and there's no stars. In a triangular shape.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's huge. She said it was as big as a football field. And it was moving fast. And it just freaked her out, you know. And she said she watched it. It moved really fast. And it was fairly low. And then it just shot right up and disappeared within a couple seconds. It was gone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it's a typical triangle with the lights on the corner and everything.
Uh-huh. Do you know what year that would have been?
Oh, gosh. He's about 20, about 18 years ago.
So I wonder if that would correlate with the Phoenix lights in that same time span.
Could be. It could be.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was born in 98, so right around 98 to 202.
Okay.
Yeah, right in that time frame.
Oh, wow, that's intense.
Yeah, I know. When I wanted to go out with me now to look at UFOs, she said, Mom, I've seen them. It's like watching the latest model car. What's the big deal? So anyway, she had kids to raise, and she's and working and stuff. And later on, when she had the opportunity, we went to a UFO convention, and that's about 5 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to listen to Dr. Stephen Greer.
Oh, sure.
And we went to his meditation session, which lasts about 3 hours, and he tries to teach people how to connect, because he feels that we need to be the ambassadors. The government is never going to open this up. It's really up to us,
right,
the people, to do it. So I learned how to do that, but I never had anybody to do it with me, because, you know, what compares to the triangle? But I finally had a friend who went with me, and I live on a hill, mm-hmm. and we went up the hill, and the first thing we saw, so we do the meditation, and the funny thing is when they talk about the CSETI, you know, they talk about meditating for hours and everything. Well, my friend and I, she's kind of psychic too, and I find when you're with psychic people, things are more likely to happen. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting there, and we do our little meditation and everything, and we're about 30 feet from the neighbor's fence, and we're in a open area. It's fairly open, like it's like under the power, the big power towers.
Oh, sure.
So that's public land, and it's open. And we both see this tiny glowing orange orb on the fence. And I'm thinking, that must be a reflection from something, you know. It's kind of like a neon orange. I'm looking around the fence, and I can't see anything that would reflect it. And then when she said she was seeing the same thing, I'm thinking, okay, that's interesting. Well, later on, when I'm listening to other podcasts and stuff, they're saying, you know, size doesn't matter. It's like Orion's Bell on mm-hmm. that cat in the movie.
Men in Black, yeah.
Yeah, its size doesn't matter. So it could be a spaceship. It could be anything. So, okay, I'll put that on the back burner. Then we went up a week or so later, and this time, now this is in the early evening. It's still light out. And so, you know, everything's clear. You can see everything clearly. And I see this, what looks like a satellite
mm-hmm.
or the ISS, except it's going the wrong way because it's going from north to south.
Oh.
So I thought, okay, they're telepathic. I have some telepathic ability.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, if you're a satellite, fine. But if you're a spaceship, would you stop? And it stopped.
Oh my God.
It did. It stopped. And I said, okay, can you back up? And it backed up. And it just kind of went forward and back. Now, there were cirrus clouds can create that impression when you're looking at stars, like they're actually moving.
Mm-hmm.
But this wasn't just a wavering. This was a definite movement forward and back. So if I'm looking at my hand, it would be like an inch. If I'm looking up, it's that much in the sky. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so there was, it was pretty definite. So we thanked them because we were both getting tired. And we thanked them and went back to the house. So I didn't see her for a while. She went back to California. And in the fall of 2017, another group, I think it's East Eddie, my number was on there. So this lady called me. She's local. She says, hey, you want to do this? And I said, heck yeah. So, you know, an hour and a half later, she's over at my house. Now, this is in the fall, so it's getting dark early because mm-hmm. I'm in the north. And it's about 6:30, I think. But there's a big field down the street from my house, and that's where we went. Set up our chairs, set up the recording device because I had downloaded Dr. Greer's eSteady app.
Okay.
And we're listening to the meditation and we're playing the notes that he had heard from one of his sessions in Shasta. And right away, here's the thing. 2 weeks before that, or some weeks before that, when I would meditate, I meditate in my bedroom. I look to the west because I'm on a hill. And I would see these, like, flashes, like little tiny flash bulbs of light, right?
Oh, okay.
And I thought, well, dang, you know, here I am, I got to wear glasses. Now, what the heck is going, you know, what else is going wrong with my sight? And then I would see these strips of light, you know, just a line. And it's a bright light, but it just real fast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, something's wrong with my eyes, maybe. Or maybe, you know, I've been told that there's angels around me by a couple psychics who may be saying that because it's profitable, or maybe it's true. I don't know.
Right.
But anyway, so when I'm with this gal, I had the app and the compass on it was pointing to the west, not north. So I said, okay, let's put our chairs to the west because it's supposed to pick up electromagnetic energy.
Uh-huh.
So we're facing west, and I'm seeing these flashes of light. And I said, you know, I told her about it. She says, yeah, I see them too.
Mm.
She was seeing exactly the same thing I was seeing.
Okay.
So it's like, thank God, my eyes are okay. But So I didn't know if there was some type of communication or really what was going on there. So then I'm trying to remember now because it's been a couple years. And we had the compass suddenly made a 180 and it was facing east.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we turned around and we faced the east and we had to move the chairs to get out of any street lights so they wouldn't,
right,
you know, wouldn't be in our sight. And we both got what they call ASMRs. Do you know what ASMRs are?
I'm not familiar with that, no.
It's when you use Reiki, because I can do mm-hmm. some Reiki.
Okay.
You get the, or when you hear something and it just, when I hear something and I know it's true sometimes, mm-hmm. you get this tingling feeling all over.
Oh.
Have you ever felt that?
I have, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, they're called ASMRs. So we okay. both got them.
Mm.
And, you know, we had the impression that somebody was next to us, but we couldn't see anything. So then, I know something else happened that I can't think of it just now, but I was using a laser because that's what you're supposed to do, is use a laser pointer so they know where you are. And because I'm near a flight path that's to the west, I have to be really careful when I use it.
Right.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Yes.
I have to make sure I have to wait till the planes go by before I use it. And then I would just flash it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Just, okay, here I am, you know, zap. Well, I pointed it towards the east, just a little to the south of me. I pointed it. And, of course, I'm only using it for a second. So I pointed it, and I turned it off right away. And then I looked at her and I said, did you see that? Because I had pointed it right on a UFO.
Oh, my
right
gosh.
Right on it. Yeah. And so she goes, yeah, I saw that. And I thought, well, how cool is that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the UFO, if you held your hand, let's say maybe 8 inches in front of your face, was about the size of a half dollar, I'd say.
Okay.
Quarter to a half dollar. So it's a ways out, and it was about at a 45 or less than, let's say 30 to 45 degree angle.
Okay.
So about like that. And then a couple minutes later, you know, so we're all stoked and everything. And then a couple minutes later, now, here in Washington, the clouds lay really low sometimes. I mean, you just feel like you could reach up and touch them. They're so low. And that night, there were big, puffy clouds. It wasn't necessarily overcast, mm-hmm. but there were a lot of big, puffy clouds.
Okay.
So there's these clouds right above the neighborhood. And we looked up, and there was one right in the cloud, right that high. And the reason I bring up the clouds is I'm trying to gauge the distance, because it was 1,000 feet or less.
Wow.
And it was opaque. It was similar to the cloud, actually. It was clearly defined, but there were no lights. There was nothing deep. You know what I'm saying? You can't say, oh, it's metallic or anything, because it was opaque.
Uh-huh.
And it was your typical saucer shape. And I turned to her and I said, did you see that? And she goes, yeah. When I looked back, it was gone. But we were so stoked. It's like, yeah, we made communication. This is really cool. You know, where are we going to take it next time?
Right.
Yeah. So by now we're cold. It's really cold because it's fall.
Sure.
So we said our thanks and all that and, you know, wrapped up our stuff and went home. And that was my last sighting.
That's really intense. Now, I gotta go back to the orange orb, the small thing that you saw. And,
yeah.
You know, the thing that's, I think, we always assume that everything is in our scale. And, but there are stories around, like, there's one story I can think of right offhand that I've covered on the show before, and it came out of Malaysia. And these kids were in the jungle of Malaysia. There was a group of children, and now it's children, so you got to take it for what it is. But they maintained into their adulthood that the story was true. But they were in the jungle, and they saw this little group of people near I think it was a saucer-shaped craft that was landed. But the figures themselves were only a few inches tall. And the kids being kids, they saw that they were moving, but they thought, well, let's check them out. And so they tried to go and pick them up like action figures. And apparently the visitors didn't like that much. And apparently they had like energy weapons and started shooting the kids. And the kids apparently, when they got home, they were screaming and crying about it. But they had little burn marks on their skin, these little small circles of burns where they said they got shot. And, well, I just think it's really interesting what you said. It's like, it's very, very true that we assume everything's going to be in our scale, but I'm sure that, you know, from the infinite reaches of space, that there could be little micro people, for all we know, and there could be giant people for all we know. And, that's a great point that when you see these small orbs, that doesn't mean they aren't, manned with a living being necessarily. I think a lot of times we think if it's small, it must be just a drone or mechanical, but you know, that is a great reminder.
Yeah. It could be a mothership for all we know. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the rest of them are really tiny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Native Americans have legends of little people. Not
yes.
just on the land, but even
yes.
here in the States.
Yeah, and even on Sasquatch Chronicles, somebody had called in once, and I don't mean to spiderweb, but I just think this is a really interesting discussion and one that doesn't get mentioned much. But somebody saw what looked like this little person, but it was more like a creature, kind of like a being more than a human. But it was a small humanoid-shaped being about 2 or 3 feet tall, and he saw it in the woods and it ran, and he followed it a little bit, but it ran over to this, like, it looked like a barrel. It hopped in the barrel and the barrel flew away. So, I mean, you're right.
wow.
Yeah. Just some crazy stuff out there, but it's absolutely fascinating. That all of these things very well could be out there and that people are experiencing them. And of course you are no exception to that. Those are some incredible stories.
Yeah. Well, actually, oh, that one slipped my mind, so I'm going to go to the next one.
Okay.
Okay, so since we're up here in the north, we like to go south for the winter. We usually spend a week in Phoenix, right?
Oh, nice.
And so we went to Sedona last December.
Uh-huh.
And the big thing there, and that is a happening place, I'm telling you. I've been to Sedona several times, and I didn't feel anything different, you know, anything different than when I feel at home. So I thought, well, I don't really have to go here, you know, to feel vortexes or anything. They're at home too. Yeah. Well, this time was different, and I don't know if it's because there's so many psychics there or what the thing is, but this one thing in particular was really cool. They like to go up to the plateau where the airport is and watch the sunset on the bluffs opposite the valley. So we thought, okay, we'll do that too. We went up there, and it's real pretty. It's beautiful because of the red cliffs, and then you have the sunlight making even redder, and it's really, really pretty. But we left a few minutes early because we didn't want to be caught in the crowd, because it's a two-lane road going up and down and twist, and we didn't want to be stuck in traffic. So we left about 10 minutes before everybody else did, or 15 or so. And I'm looking at the cliffs because I really don't want to miss any more of that sunlight on the bluffs, right?
Right.
And I saw, now these bluffs, because I tried to figure it out with a topographical map, just how high they are. So Sedona, I think it's 5,000 feet or 3,000, but there's about a 2,000 foot difference between Sedona and the valley and the bluffs. And I saw what could have been a stargate. I saw a neon, kind of a beautiful topaz blue needle-like structure that was about three-quarters the height of the bluff. And it just widened a little bit in the middle, and then it just disappeared.
Oh, my God.
Did I see that? Did I really see that? And so I'm watching, just in case it comes back. And it did. About a minute or so later, it came back, and I saw it again. It did exactly the same thing, like something came through, and then something went back, kind of like that. Now, I didn't see any ships or anything like that, but I don't know what else it could have been except a stargate.
Wow, that's incredible.
it was beautiful too, just this beautiful topaz blue.
I think you're the first person I've ever talked to that has seen something like that, and that to me is absolutely incredible.
Well, they say that they have, you know, there's a history of Sedona being a landing strip for ETs way back when.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they talk about that kind of stuff going on now. I'm just, you know, happy that I was able to see something like that.
Yeah, that's once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience.
Yeah, but I heard a story. Now, this is, of course, second, third hand if you want to hear, but it's a really cool story. This gal said a friend of hers, and this is here in Washington.
Okay.
A friend of hers, he has stepped out to, let's be honest, marijuana's legal here, right?
So
he stepped out to have a joint. And he's looking at the sky, and it's probably, you know, the way she said the story, it was probably around 12 or 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees the sky open up. He sees a stargate open up. And he sees all these craft come through.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And he's thinking, okay, yeah, I'm smoking a joint here. So he goes inside. He gets his girlfriend, who does not smoke at all. He says, come out here and tell me if I'm seeing what I'm seeing. And she saw exactly the same thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, I know. Now, that's something I would really like to see.
Yeah, it's almost intimidating, though. I mean, what is going on? I mean, why are so many coming?
and again, you know, with the story of the secret space program, you don't know if they're theirs or they're ours or what it is.
Yeah, no, that's true. That makes you wonder for sure. Wow. That's intense.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I was thinking is like, God, you know, is that like a, is it the invading army or is it just, you know, business as usual? You know, that's something that must have been just overwhelming.
I would think he wasn't scared or anything. And okay. I would think it's just business as usual, really.
Sure.
Because honestly, Brent, if they were going to do anything to us, why would they wait till, you know, we have nuclear weapons? They could have done it any time in the last couple hundred thousand years.
That's a perfect point. I'm so glad you said that, and I appreciate that.
I mean, why even wait for sentient beings? Just go ahead and take over the planet, you know, any time in the last millions of years, hundreds of millions. So I'm not too worried about it.
Good for you. And I think that you're right. I assume that being, you know, I mean, maybe it's just wishful thinking, but I assume that if they are indeed these advanced species, as we believe they are, then I would hope they would have worked through the whole aggression kind of thing long ago before they started interstellar travel.
Well, yeah, because if they didn't, would they even exist?
Right.
I mean, look at where we are right now. We don't know if we're going to make it or not.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
That aggressive, would they even have made it off their planet?
Right. Good point. Lots of great insights. I really appreciate what you have to say.
So I have an interesting story about a guardian angel.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
To that. We're kind of going back to the beginning now.
Okay.
But my first husband was Hispanic. And as you know, they tend to be more... they tend to have weird things happen, right? So when he was a little boy, he was playing in the street, and he actually saw his guardian angel. Oh. His guardian angel came and told him to get out of the street because it wasn't safe, and he did, and a car went by. If he hadn't moved, that car would have run right over him.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, so he was about, I'm guessing he was about 4. And the other thing that happened to him was he had an out-of-body experience when he was little. He says 2, but I don't see how he could have been 2 years old. He and his mother walked to the store, and he was carrying a milk carton home.
Okay.
And he dropped to his knees, and it turned out the milk carton was too heavy, and he got a hernia. So he had to have an operation.
Aww.
So here's this little boy. He's on the operating table, and he left his body.
Oh.
He left his body, and he went out of the hospital, and he was talking to somebody. And the person said, now you, this is your opportunity. If you feel that this life is too hard, you can leave now. You will have one more opportunity when you're 13. So what do you want to do? So he decided to stay.
Okay.
And he doesn't recall anything happening life-threatening when he was 13. But this part is sad. So he kept telling me when he was 28, 29, he said, when I'm 30, my life is going to change.
Hmm. Okay.
And he had an accident.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and he had a brain injury. But before the accident, he was out riding his, not a motorcycle, it's one of those tricycles.
Oh, okay.
With a friend, and I'm not going to go into the details of the accident, but the point of this is that his father was sitting in the living room, they're watching TV, and his father suddenly called out, "Richard, look out." And both the mother and the father knew something was wrong. And his mother, I lived a block away. She walked down to the house, and she came in the house. I thought, oh, that's nice. This is the first time she's actually come to visit me down here. I usually go over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she was there when the call came, and she was able to watch the children so I could go to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so his life did change.
I'm sorry. That's... It's an amazing story, but it's so tragic at the same time.
Well, it was hell.
Yeah.
And so I had, of course, I had trouble sleeping, and I was adamantly opposed to any kind of drugs or pills and stuff like that.
Sure.
And the doctor put me on this one pill, and a friend came over and looked at it, and he says, "There's no way you're taking that horse pill. That is so bad for you."
Oh.
So, yeah. So I was taking some psychic classes, and they were teaching hypnosis, self-hypnosis.
Okay.
So I was using self-hypnosis to help myself sleep. And my children were in the room next to mine, and we lived in a small house, so I had two children sleeping in my room and two in the other room.
Okay.
So I'm putting myself under, and I was getting pretty good at it, too. And I was putting myself under, and then I felt not my body, but more like my energy body just expand.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it came out like maybe 2 feet around my body. It was the first time I'd ever felt anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And then right at that moment, my two kids woke up in the other room. One of them threw up, and one of them wet the bed.
Oh, my God.
That one never wet the bed.
Huh.
And what was weird was I had just finished reading The Exorcist.
Oh.
So, I know. Oh, great. I'm dealing with the devil here. Oh, my God. This is a bad thing, right?
Right.
Already my kids are throwing up and they're peeing and everything. What's next? Their head's going to turn around or something. So I stopped doing that. But years later, I talked to another psychic and she said, no, that's not what happened at all. She said she had gone on a vision quest and something similar had happened to her because as she went into her altered state, she released this powerful force that actually knocked this man over, knocked him right to the ground.
Oh, my.
She said that's what happened, was that she released this powerful force, and this is how it affected the two kids.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, I wish I'd have known that then, but...
That's amazing, though. I'd never heard of people having an experience so profoundly on the other people around them when they're doing a practice like that.
Yeah, I wish I had had someone to guide me then.
Sure.
Then I could have made some progress at that point. As it was, I just do like we're taught to do, is to stuff it down and think it's bad and not to go any further with it.
Right, right. Yeah, fear can be very counterproductive in a situation like that, for sure. But, you know, being a mother, I can't blame you. I mean, that's the first thing you'd think is, oh, my gosh, what am I doing to my babies? So,
Well, it didn't help that I just read that book.
Yeah, that's not...
You know, and growing up, going to a Lutheran school for 6 years, you know, it's, oh, sure. My God, this must be the devil.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah.
That's incredible. But I think we're going to take a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back in just a couple minutes with Annie and more of her incredible journey. So don't go away. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, we are back and back at it here on the Paranormal Portal Podcast with our special guest today is Annie, and she's going through an incredible list of encounters and experiences that she's had, and it's just been an absolute thrill ride for the first part of the show, so we're going to get right back to it. And thank you so much for being here again. I am just thrilled to hear all of the things that you've decided to share thus far. It's just incredible.
I think I'm ready to go into my brother, when I lost my brother now.
Okay.
Because this is, I'll do my best to get through this.
Oh, I'm here with you.
Okay, so there were five of us kids, and my mother was open-minded. She was very open-minded about this. Not that she got into any of that stuff, but, you know, she had told us a story about. It wasn't uncommon back in the 30s and 40s and sometime around that time for when someone passed away to hear the furniture knock. Oh. And that was the story she told me, that either it was an uncle or a relative or a friend of an uncle or something like that of hers, that when someone passed away, the furniture, the dresser knocked three times every night at 6 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it gets a little unnerving after a while, and he talked to someone about it, and he said, well, put a Bible on the dresser, and it'll go away. So that's what he did, and it did. It went away. So it wasn't, and back at that time, that was Outer Limits and all that stuff, sure. You know, and so there was all the telepathy thing that they had, you know, and all that cool stuff, and of course, you're a kid, you want to be able to do all that stuff, you know.
Right.
But as it happened, I didn't know that I had any ability at all, but we talked about it a little bit, but not too much. But getting into my brother, when I lost him, my sister had a dream. Now, he had just turned 19 in May.
Mm-hmm.
And sometime before that, she had a dream, and she went to him and she said, I dreamed you went to a hospital and you didn't come back. And he said, okay. So in June, he loved motorcycles, and there wasn't that much traffic back then. And so he'd go out riding, and he and a friend were out riding, and they were in Bokeh Canyon, a good place to go riding. It's in the hills northeast of San Fernando Valley.
Okay.
And he had an oil slick in the road. And lost control of the bike.
Oh.
Slammed into a bridge, hit him in the midsection, and damaged his liver.
Oh, wow.
So he was hospitalized, and this happened the week of my sister's birthday when she turned 16.
Okay.
And because I was 14, I wasn't allowed to go in the hospital. They didn't allow children in the hospital in those days. So I don't remember if I ever actually went to the hospital. I kind of have a memory, but I don't know if it's something that I created.
Oh,
and if
sure.
I did, it was only one time.
Okay.
But so he was in the hospital for a month as he deteriorated. And then he passed away the week of my birthday when I turned 15. So
sorry.
Yeah. So They were hoping, because even back then they were hoping that there would be a breakthrough in organ transplants,
mm-hmm.
and that they would be able to save him. So from this point, I want to go back to something else that happened with my brother.
Okay.
So my sister knew she had some telepathic ability. So she had my brother had a friend over, and this would be like maybe when he was 16, 17, around there. And he had a friend over, and that morning they're sitting at the breakfast table having breakfast, and my sister goes down, and she's half asleep, you know, and she sits down at the table, and she's looking down at her food, and she's listening to them talk. And then she looked up, and she said, when she told me this, she said, their mouths weren't moving.
Oh, wow.
And honestly, this is the only time I have heard of two people having a telepathic conversation.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So, because I've never been able to do that, that's for sure. I can pick the thoughts of people close to me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I know that I have is because they'll start saying exactly what I was thinking.
Right, right. Yeah.
But that's the only way I know. So when he was in the hospital, at that time they didn't have an ICU. What they had was a nurse who stayed with them. And the nurse, he was probably, it'd probably been about 3 weeks, I guess. And of course he's losing a lot of weight because he can't eat, and they're tube feeding him and stuff like that. He was at the point where he couldn't eat or drink by himself. And so he asked her for a glass of water, and she went over and she gave it to him. And that's when she realized he was too weak to talk.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So she asked to be taken off the case because she was getting too attached to them. And in that line of work, you can't let yourself do that.
Right. How powerful is that, though?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's it. That's incredibly incredibly profound. Again, I know, unfortunately, the circumstances are incredibly painful, and that's not the kind of thing you ever forget. But just the fact that so many incredible things were demonstrated throughout the course of that, I think, is still just really profound.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that wasn't the end of it. He wasn't ready to go.
Okay.
So I think it was about 3-4 months later. I'm not sure. I just know it was, I can't quite remember. But anyway, my sister and I were the only ones that were home. And she was at the other end of the house in her bedroom. And I was down in the family room. And that part of the house had linoleum flooring.
Okay.
And I heard footsteps. And so I'm thinking, you know, oh my God. So I went over to my sister because, you know, you go to your older sister because they know, right?
Right.
Excuse me. So I go over and I told her, I said, I heard footsteps. And she said, that's Buddy. That's Buddy. And then that's when she told me that she had slept in his room one night and she heard him come in. She didn't see anything, but he was a methodical person. He had habits.
Sure.
He'd be out with his friends, and he'd come in about 10 o'clock at night. So she heard him come in, and they had a large bedroom, the boys did, mm-hmm. and they had their own bathroom. So she would hear him come in, and then she could hear the bathroom door open and close, and she could hear the shower door open and close. And then she'd hear the bathroom door open. And then she would hear the sliding door of the closet open and close because he always hung up his clothes at night.
Wow.
So, because he was, you know, he was only 19. He just wasn't quite ready to go. And from what I can remember, that kept going on for about 3 months before he finally passed over.
That's incredible. You know, and it doesn't surprise me, like you say, being so young and probably feeling like there was so much more to do, and probably his profound love for you all, you know,
yeah.
and not wanting to leave. That's amazing.
Yeah, he was actually the glue that held the family together. He was highly intelligent.
Okay.
Well, and he's the one you think is going to go places, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. I could.
We might make it somewhere, but he's definitely going somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he's still with you to this day.
Yeah. And
I do believe that they, you know, our loved ones don't just abandon us. I think that they become our guardians, and they become our guides in a sense. And, you know, my father passed away just a couple of years ago, and he's had a profound presence in for my mom and myself. And, you know, as far as meeting him in dreams and just these beautiful cathartic dreams that I've had since his passing. And, you know, maybe it's just me processing those things, but I'm telling you, they were so lucid and so real. I've never dreamt so powerfully before in my entire life. And it gave him a hug. It smelled like him. It felt like him. It was bright, vivid color. It was incredibly powerful experiences. And I'm sure that he was there in that dream with me.
Yeah, I don't think it was a dream. I think you actually were in his dimension. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's a great idea as well. I only use the term dream is because my body was asleep when it happened. But you're right. I could have, you know, been in some ethereal plane with him and having that moment. But it was just incredible. And I'm so grateful for it because, you know, there's always those things left unsaid or those things left undone. And it was so incredibly powerful and healing. And I wasn't there, you know, when he passed. I couldn't be there. And then, you know, he had been failing for a long time and I visited when I could, but eventually when he passed, it was hard because I was so far away. But then to have that moment with him and such a wonderful, warm moment that we shared, it's been so incredibly cathartic and healing for me.
It would be. That's fantastic. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And I think those moments, like even, I don't know how you felt when you guys heard your brother, you know, walking around and stuff, but I'm hoping that it was a good thing for you guys.
I think it was good for my sister. I was scared. I was scared of ghosts.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you're like, I'm only 15.
Yeah.
And you want them to come back, but you know they can't.
Right.
And so what I did to overcome that fear was I read a lot of books. As I got older in my 20s, I started reading a lot of books. And that's when I realized, because you know what it is, you watch these ghost movies.
Uh-huh.
And like they're horrific, right? They just happen out of the, you know, suddenly this thing is attacking you or something.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
But when I read these books, I realized there's rules. Even on that plane, there's rules.
Yes.
And once I realized there were rules, then I felt okay. Like something's not going to jump out at me or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think generally that, you know, if you're in a situation where you're dealing with a haunting, just having a dialogue and saying, look, I realize you're here. This is what I'm okay with. This is what I'm not okay with. And, you know, if you can live along with those means, you're welcome to stay in love and harmony. But
yeah, that's the thing is realizing that we have the power.
Yes, exactly. Very,
we
very true.
We have the power. They have to do what we say.
Yeah, very, very true. And I think there are those negative entities that want to confuse us about that. But you're right. We always have the abilities if we believe in them.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, yeah, very
true. I just learned that recently, which was helpful. But I was able to be there when my mother passed away. I was living in Colorado at the time, and she was in California. And so she had a major stroke, and we immediately drove out there, my son and I.
Mm-hmm.
So I was with her when she passed away. And this was one of my first telepathic experiences, I guess you could say, because I knew what she was thinking as soon as she passed away. Oh. Her first thought, and I want to go back just a little bit, because sure. I called my sister and I said, I thought she was just going to have, you know, that she might be partially paralyzed or something. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to wait and see how this pans out, you know. And then I said to the nurse, what kind of medication is she on? Because she didn't really she wasn't really aware of anything. And she said, oh, she's non-responsive. And I'm going, well, what does that mean? she's non-responsive. But what does that mean?
Yeah.
She wouldn't come right out and tell me that she was in a coma. And I said, well, what kind of medications is she on? Because she's non-responsive, right? Mm-hmm. And she's not on, and she said she's not on medication. And I'm going, oh, my God. Oh, my God, she's dying.
Oh.
She's dying. And I hadn't talked to a doctor or anything. I didn't even realize that until, you know, the second or third day I was in. So I called my sister and I said, because my other sister hadn't bothered to contact the family members. You know how that goes sometimes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I called my sister and I said, Mom is dying. So she came over. She had to drive in from Ontario, which is about an hour and a half away. And she spent the night with her. And I saw her that evening, and she said, Mom's got pain in her head. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, you know what you're talking about. She probably does. And now I realize that stroke victims probably do, and doctors don't know it, and they should be giving them some kind of pain medication.
Yes.
Yeah. So when I was there with her, and death is really a peaceful thing. She just stopped breathing, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And her first thought was, the pain is gone.
Oh,
and her second thought was, I feel so light, which is what I've read about people when they come back, yeah. When they've left their body, you know, when they've died and they come back, their bodies feel so heavy.
Yes.
And then she went up out of the hospital and she didn't realize I was there. So she didn't communicate with me or anything. So that was the first time I realized I could pick up these thoughts.
That's amazing. Wow.
And then I was with my stepmother when she died. And she was kind of she's a very outgoing person.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of you might say, a dynamic personality.
Okay.
So I was holding her hand thinking, oh, this is the last time I'm going to hold her hand. And my daughter was there with me, and my stepmother's friend, who was a doctor, and his wife were there. My dad just wasn't up to the task.
Okay.
So the four of us were there, and about 20 more minutes before she actually stopped breathing, I could feel her spirit lift out of her body.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at my daughter, and I said, did you feel her leave? And she said, yes, I felt it. And then, but you're not sure because they're still breathing, right?
Right.
But apparently her spirit did go ahead and leave before her body finally expired.
And you both felt it. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. My daughter verified it. And then as I'm holding her hand thinking, well, this is the last time I'm ever going to hold her hand. And now I didn't hear a voice, mm-hmm. but I could hear the inflection of her voice, the way she would say it, if she actually said it. And she said, get out of here. That's not me. I'm going, okay, I'm going.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there were two other times that I, people who had died had contacted me. One was a friend,
mm-hmm.
and it was her brother, and he was young too. He was 30.
Okay.
I'm very close to my friend, who is my ex-son's wife, actually. I mean, we're great friends.
Uh-huh.
I go down to California and I visit all these exes because they love me.
Well, that's good. It's better than hating you.
Yeah. So she lost her brother. And a short time after that, I was sitting at my writing desk and I could feel this person pressing me. And I could sense that it took me a few moments to realize who it was. And you have to tell her. You have to tell her I'm alive. You have to tell her. You have to tell her. This thought kept pressuring my mind, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he became so insistent that it scared me a little bit because I wasn't used to this, you know.
Okay.
So I said, okay, she's going to think I'm nuts, but I'll write a letter. So I wrote her a note. I said, I know you're going to think I'm nuts, but your brother wants me to tell you that he's alive. And then I mailed it off. And as I sealed it in the envelope, I thought, I'm going to know why he sent me this message.
Uh-huh.
So sometime after that, we talked about it, and she said, yeah, he thought that when you died, that was it. There was nothing else. Because at the time when he said that I'm alive, I'm going, yeah, and your point is. But he wanted her to know there's life after death, which she believed anyway. Mm-hmm. He wanted her to know that he was alive and there is life after death.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So the other time was more recent. This is just a couple years ago. Another close friend, and she's in California too. She lost a good friend of hers, and this friend was a young woman who was suffering a lot of pain. I didn't get the details of it at the time because we just had a brief conversation about it. But when the friend told me, she says, tell her I'm all right and I'm happy. And my friend had just talked to me about an hour or so before and told me that this person had died.
Mm-hmm.
And this had, you know, she was telling me a little bit about this and she was sad and so on. And it was a brief conversation because she's contacting other people. So when I got this message from her friend, I immediately called my close friend and I said, your friend wants me to tell you that she's okay and she's happy.
Oh, that's great.
Now, some people are going to disagree with this, but it gave me a great deal of comfort because her friend committed suicide.
Oh.
She couldn't take the pain anymore and she jumped off a bridge on freeway.
Oh, that's such a heartbreaker. But
one thing was, you know, I had been suicidal, mm-hmm. and you are not in your right mind when it happens.
Right.
You're not thinking clearly. You cannot think of consequences. All you know is you're going through this horrible emotional pain.
Yeah.
Lucky for me, I was a coward. But so I think when you're in that state, God is not going to punish you. You are not yourself. And
yeah.
This girl was in such pain. So I honestly believe that she was very happy on the other side. She was free of her pain.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And of course, you know, it's not ever the right answer. But, you know, in those states, you know, I've lost people close to me from suicide as well. And it's such a devastating, heartbreaking thing. But the one thing that I've always hoped, and I've never had that affirmation before, was I hope they're okay now, you know. And so it's beautiful to hear that. You know, it's certainly never the way you want people to respond to their pain and their problems, but at least there's a mercy to it at that point. And you know, I'm not really big on the whole punishment judgmental thing either. I don't think that, you know, it doesn't seem to make sense to me, but to each his own and to each their own. I don't mean to preach to anybody, but I think that's a beautiful thing. And I'm really thrilled that you chose to share that, because I also know that we have some listeners who have lost loved ones to suicide. And I think that's a great message to, you know, to put out there.
Yeah, and I do want them to understand, you are not in your right mind when all you want to do is escape the pain you're in.
Yeah.
Whether it's emotional or whatever, you don't know where to turn. And so that's, you know, I just honestly feel God's heart is way bigger than ours,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And I agree with you completely. And it's wonderful to hear that girl was okay. I think it's more damaging to everyone that's left behind. You know, I don't know if there's a spiritual consequence to that or not. I don't like to believe that there is. And I think that throughout the course of our lives, we have challenges. We have, because I believe that life is about growth and expanding and becoming a better version of ourselves, in a manner of speaking. And take that for whatever it means to each of you out there listening. But, you know, it's, it's a tough road, and sometimes the road is so dark and so heavy, and some people just don't feel like there's, you know, that they can take another step. And I've been down myself in life, and it's, I don't know that I was quite suicidal, but I know I was hurting about as much as I thought I could hurt. And I was just pleading for something to come and help me and take it away. And eventually I got better. I got through it, but, you know, being in those dark places is so hard.
Yeah, it's walking through the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's what it is. And you just have to hang in there because it will get better.
Yeah.
Especially, I want to mention this since we're speaking to the general people out there.
Yes.
Books used to help me a lot. Excuse me. I would get it when I really needed it, a book would come to me.
Oh, cool.
So I had things were not easy in my first marriage. They were, honestly, I was suicidal and going insane. I was literally going insane because at that time you didn't get a divorce, not in my family, right?
Right.
And I'm in this situation that's just intolerable. And I started going into a fantasy world to cope.
Mm-hmm.
And a book came to me. I never promised you a rose garden.
Oh,
that
okay.
is the book. And the writer must have been through this herself to know exactly what this young woman was thinking, because she saw life through this gray mist.
Mm-hmm.
And when I used to investigate auras and things like that, depression causes, it starts with a gray color around you.
Uh-huh.
And can go to black. And I think that's what she was seeing. She was seeing her world through this gray color in her aura.
Uh-huh.
And that's how she would cope, but she would go into this fantasy world, and she was going to a therapist and all that. And that's when I realized I was going insane. And I had two children, and I thought, I can't let this happen to me. I've got to pull myself out of this, and I'm sure as heck not going to go to any institution. They have crappy food and horrible, horrible clothing. I'm not going to wear that. I would be caught dead in that stuff. You know?
Sure.
So I did, and the next book that came to me was Psycho-Cybernetics, and I think they call it, there's another one that's a takeoff on the exact same thing now, but what Psycho-Cybernetics was written by a Rosicrucian, and what it is, and it's what people are waking up to now, is we can create different realities for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when we go to sleep and when we wake up, we go into and we come into a natural hypnotic state. So when I would go to sleep at night, I would picture what I wanted my life to be, and I would, and it said, picture it as vividly as you can. The more real it is to you, the faster you can make your life change. Mm. And that's how I got to where I am now, and I have everything now that I wanted.
Oh, wonderful.
And it does work.
That's beautiful.
So just remember that as you're going to sleep, imagine as vividly as you can, as though it's actually happening, what you want in your life. And that, and you're working with a material existence, so it takes time.
Sure.
But it will happen. And that's when when things are really bad, that is what you need to do. And I talked to another woman who had done the same thing, because it had completely changed her life. She even changed her children. She had adult children that were messing up and everything. So she would imagine them as she wanted them to be. And you don't imagine the feeling of what it would be like if this was so.
Oh, okay.
That's what she did. And 2 years later, she had the life she wanted, and her children had pulled themselves out of the trouble that they were in and were living normal, happy lives again.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a wonderful, magnificent tool that, of course, I'm a little bit of a conspiracy person, so these things were kind of hidden from us. But now it's coming out into the open, and there's so many books on this subject.
Mm-hmm. That is just amazing, and everything you've shared today, I think, is so powerful and so amazing. Is there anything else you wanted to get into?
Oh my gosh. When you talk about taking your power, this is one of my first experiences. I lived in a haunted house, but we didn't know it was haunted. This is with my first husband. But he never quite felt comfortable in it. And so he would often kind of not, you know, he'd come home late or whatever, you know. And after a year, we were moving out of the house. And he says, you know, one of the reasons I hesitated to come home was because I've never quite felt comfortable here. But so he said, so I'm back in the bedroom packing up stuff. And he says, I'm going to catch this. I think it's a ghost and I'm going to catch it, you know. So he tried to clear his mind. He walked down the hall from the bedrooms. And when you come out, the kitchen is on the left and the living room is on the right. So he's keeping his mind clear. He heads toward the living room and suddenly he turns toward the left to the kitchen. And he saw a shadow across the kitchen table. And he goes, aha, I've caught you. And the shadow just disappeared.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, when he told me that, we couldn't pack up our stuff fast enough.
Oh, my
but
God.
But it also helped me realize something, because I had trouble sleeping at night. And you know, I would have to make up stories in my head so that I could go to sleep, because it just, something just didn't feel right. And then one afternoon, I'm sitting in the kitchen table and I suddenly find myself having this conversation in my head. And I'm thinking, you know what? This is my house. I pay the bills.
Right.
I keep it clean. I take care of it. This is my house. And I never had that feeling in the kitchen again.
Oh, cool.
And then I realized it was this ghost. It was a woman.
Oh,
and
okay.
Later on, about a year or so later, I went to a party at the next door neighbor at that house. Mm-hmm. And that's when I find out that the house was haunted, you know. Verification again.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's how you take away your, how you, you have the power.
How you claim your power. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
Wow. That's wonderful. Yeah.
So now we can go into the ghost stories.
Okay.
I was always open to this stuff, so people would tell me their ghost stories and things like that. And I had a friend when the kids were young, they're like, she was another young mother like me. And she said one night she was either sitting on her bed or she was in bed. And it's nighttime, and the window is at the end of the bed, and she sees a figure, and it has a hooded cowl, and she's looking at the back of it, and it turned around, and it had no face. And she was so scared, she just passed out right on the bed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that would scare me, too. That would, that would freak me out.
Absolutely.
I had, we had a Victorian house near the town we lived in California. This is in the Santa Clarita Valley. So the biggest, near town is Ventura. And there's this highway 126. It was a two lane road at the time. There's some Victorian farmhouses there. So my kids told me they used to go over there because there was this one room on the second floor that was always cold, always cold. And the window was cracked, and they would go in there because they knew that there was a ghost there. Yeah, you know how teenagers are.
Wow.
And then so they could be scared and everything. And they said every time that window was repaired, it would crack again.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And another story, another ghost story from that area, there was a young woman who was killed on 126. There were a lot of accidents on 126 because there was poor visibility. It's a... orange groves. That's where they grow oranges.
Okay.
So you can't see around the turns and stuff. And not only that, the speed limit's like 55 miles an hour. So traffic's going, we had some bad accidents. They used to call it Blood Alley. It was one of the worst highways in California. But this one girl was killed on the highway there. And there was a rumor that her ghost was at this particular intersection where it, a T intersection, where there was a tree. Now, this one's kind of funny, but her the daughter told me about this. I was taking a class with her, not in high school. This is, we were adults. Okay. Young adults. And so she told me this story, but her father had come home from Ventura. He came by the tree and he saw this young woman was on the hood of his car.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, I know. And of course, everybody's going, ah, oh, you're drinking. You know? Yeah. What were you smoking? You know? But who knows?
Right.
Who knows? The legends are there for a reason.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Another thing that happened at the house in when I lived in Fillmore was I was sleeping on the couch, and at this time I'm trying to understand what I'm feeling, why trying to get a handle on the ghost thing and the paranormal thing and all of that. So I'm reading and all of that, and I thought, well, gosh, it'd be kind of cool to be a medium because you're young and you think that's cool. Right now it's like, no way, I just don't want to be bothered. There's people who do it better than me. Let them take care of it, you know. I don't need this in my house.
Sure.
But I'm sleeping on the couch, and I hear this crack, like if you heard a board crack, and it woke me up. But I was still kind of half asleep, so my eyes are open, and I can see the pattern on the sofa, but I'm also aware that my body's pretty much asleep. And then I'm thinking, I'm kind of sensing something is there, and I'm thinking, no, I don't want to be a medium. I don't want to do that. And I feel this pressure on my mouth and on the back of my head, like something is beating on my mouth and on the back of my head.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it didn't hurt or anything. It was a pressure like if you had like whipped cream and you hit whipped cream and if you feel that kind of pressure, you know what I mean?
Okay.
It's kind of like that.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, so I just went back to sleep. I thought, forget this. But after that, I'm thinking, that was a hostile ghost. That was really a hostile ghost. But now I realize it was just upset because it wanted to communicate and I wouldn't communicate with it.
Oh,
and it never happened again.
Oh. It was trying to make a connection, and weren't having any part of that.
No, I wasn't. But later on I did. I was living in Phoenix for a time, and I had joined this group called the Angel Girls, and they used to help people cross over.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So they taught me how to do it. It's pretty simple. They, of course, like say, they were much better than I. One of them said that she would invite them in individually once a month into her office. And when she would talk to them and explain to them, okay, you know, this is what happened to you, and I'm going to help you cross over, and this is how we're going to do it. Well, what it involves for me, the part that I did, because, hey, I'm not that good. I just, hey, you guys, you're dead. You're going over. This is how we're doing it kind of a thing, you know.
Right.
But you get a 3-day candle from the store, and I had, you make a little altar, so I had rose quartz around my altar.
Okay.
And then, because this house, when I first moved into it, it was the first time we'd been separated from my family, so I was feeling really down.
Mm-hmm.
And I sensed a presence in the house, and it was depressed, and I got the impression it was an old, lonely woman, and she was isolated. And she was very sad. And this was not helping me because I'm empathic. So I'm picking this up and I'm absorbing it, right?
Sure.
Which is making me more depressed.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I got sage and I saged the whole house. And I had to sage the house 3 times before I felt that it was really clear. You just feel that the air is light.
Right.
And then you know it's clear, right?
Uh-huh.
So when I had joined the Angel Girls, I could feel there's people here, right? They're here. It's a freaking Grand Central Station. This is just not working for me. My family comes to visit, you know.
Right.
So that's what I do is I do this little ceremony. I'd say, okay, you guys, you're all dead. It's okay, though, because I'm going to light this candle. It's going to last 3 days. And I would visualize a bridge. And by that time, I had been meditating, and I had managed to feel the love that's on the other side. And it's unimaginable when those people who are near-death experiencers, it's just unimaginable, this love.
Mm-hmm.
But I could feel some of it. And so I would feel this love, and I would say, okay, this is what's waiting for you on the other side. All the love you've ever wanted, all the people that you love, they're all waiting for you. So then I would light the candle, I would visualize the bridge, and 3 days later, the air would be completely clear.
Oh, cool.
Two or three weeks later, then I'd have the whole new crowd again, you know? But there was only one time I had a problem. There was, I would say this was a young man who was probably 30s, maybe 40, who wasn't ready to die, who was angry. And by that time, I wasn't scared anymore. And I said, look, I'm not having this in my house.
Right.
You go in the backyard, you wait there until I have this ceremony, and then I'll help you cross over. Mm-hmm. And so that was what happened. You know, like I said, every 2 or 3 weeks I would do this during the time that we lived in that house.
That's awesome. And I think my hats are really off to all of the people that have the ability to work on things like that, because I can't imagine a more sad existence than to be trapped in that melancholy and that sadness and that loneliness and to not see a way out. So I'm always thrilled to hear that psychics and people of ability are working on crossing spirits, because I think that's absolutely should be done at every, you know, everywhere, you know, like Pennhurst, like so many of the haunted locations around. I think they probably have hundreds and hundreds of these spirits that are just kind of in that limbo, and it's just such a powerful right thing to have happen.
Yeah, and gosh, I forget which person I was listening to, but they said it's really important now to be prepared yourself and to he said there really should be classes to help people prepare for that time when, you know, you the terminally ill or the aged or something, so that they know how to cross over and they just go right to where they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. It's been an incredible journey. I just am floored by what you brought to the show and what you've shared with us and your incredible insights and experiences. Thank you so much, Annie. This has been an incredible journey.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me talk about it. There's no one to talk to about it. So I really appreciate it. Brent, you and Wes and Tony Merkel and Wes Gurm, you all do a great service to people who are not able to talk about these things that happen to them.
Well, as I was saying before, I really do feel like it's an honor to be entrusted with these things, because these are sacred. These are sacred stories and sacred lessons and tales, and I'm just thrilled to have a forum that people want to share on, and it's people like you that make this show incredible. I'm just turning on the lights,
I'm just so happy for you that you had that experience with your father after he passed over. I think that is so fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much.
Fantastic.
And by all means, if you have more to share, I'd love to have you back on. We can certainly continue this discussion, but it's been an epic journey so far. And just again, thank you, because I love the beauty of your message. I love not only the fact that you're sharing experiences, but you have such an incredible and beautiful insight into them. And I love the message that you're also giving, and that's that I think a lot of people need to hear and will be very thankful to hear. So you've brought a new light to the show for sure.
Well, you're more than welcome.
Well, and ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this journey as much as I have. But Annie, thank you so much, and I really appreciate it. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at paranormalportal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But We love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
Betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and wagering week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.